Hello and welcome to How Many Geese? I'm Jack Baddams.
And I'm Roddy Shaw.
And if you're looking for a nature podcast that doesn't take itself too seriously,
then we are The Natural Selection.
On today's show,
I think a spider the size of a horse is scarier than a bear the size of a bear.
Yeah, okay.
I will die on that hill.
Do you think that if 12 leopards were chasing lasers around on the Vegas Strip, anyone would bat an eyelid?
No.
Australia is like the Madagascar of things fucking each other up. It's high time, I think, we spoke about one of my favourite animals to talk about on this show.
High time.
It's a animal that I've done a couple of times. It's one that I don't think, though, that we've done for a couple of seasons.
Can I play Guess That Animal?
Yes, you can. Of course you can.
Pheasant.
We have spoken about pheasants. We had What's in That Pheasant?
Famously.
A How Many Goose classic.
Exactly. Do I get any clue?
No, I don't think you need a clue.
Was it a swift then?
No.
Oh.
So it's one of my favourite animals.
Orca.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, there we go. It's, as I have said on this podcast and will continually reiterate, that even the worst bird is better than the best mammal. The only animal that brings that into question is orca.
Yeah.
I think they're really, really cool. So yes, we are talking about the absolute terminators of the seas, the monochrome murderers that are the orca. We've done them a couple of times in the past. We did when they were attacking boats in off the coast of Portugal.
Because we are consistently ahead of the mainstream.
Yeah. That has become big now, hasn't it?
Yeah.
But we did it in, I think, our first season, maybe.
Consistently ahead of the mainstream.
We've done that. And then we covered the scientific paper describing them taking down blue whales.
Yep.
Which was great, and we learn all about their different hunting strategies. Well, we've not spoken about them for a while, but I am continually fascinated by them, and I think they're absolutely amazing things. And on one of my ever dwindling visits to the website formerly known as Twitter, I came across an interesting tweet from a scientist talking about something that I think I did lightly touch on in the episode where we talked about them hunting whales.
Mm-hmm.
But something that I want to go into a little bit more. And we're combining two major things here, because we're featuring a goose favourite in orca, and we're also going to need that Thunderdome klaxon, the didgeridoo. Because this story takes place in nature's Thunderdome, the battle royale that is Australia. Specifically, we're on the southeast coast of Australia at the port of Eden in New South Wales.
There's just nothing, like, all roads lead to down under.
Like they do. It pops up so often. Yeah. And even when it's like an animal, like an orca, global distribution. This story could have taken place anywhere.
Yeah.
But no.
Yeah.
We're in the southeast corner of Australia.
If there are any listeners in Tajikistan who have anything interesting going on there, do let us know.
Do we just accept that Australia is nature's Thunderdome? Or is there someone in somewhere like, you know, outer Mongolia saying, we've got better, more dangerous things? Or do we all just go, yeah, that's Australia's?
I mean, even if in the early days people were like, oh, my country is interesting.
Yeah.
We're not saying your country is not interesting.
No.
But the overwhelming evidence says that shit's happening in Australia.
Because you've got Madagascar, which has got all these endemic animals and stuff. But Australia is like the Madagascar of things fucking each other up. The Madagascar of death.
Yeah.
So, we're in Australia. We're also going back in time in the goose time machine, as we often like to do as well, to between the years 1860 and 1930. Okay, are you there?
I'm there.
Are you there, listener?
I've got polio. My 13 children are...
And specifically, we are here in the winter time. Now, that's May to September, Southern Hemisphere fans.
Mm.
Remember that. Mm. May to September is the winter on this part of the Australian coast. And there's a very special orca that turns up here. This is an orca called Old Tom, who's about 6.7 metres long, weighs 6 tons and is distinguished by his extra long dorsal fin that right at the very, very top just bends to the right. And that's how you know you've got old Tom kicking around.
Yep.
Backing up old Tom are the rest of his pod. A crew of, it ranges over this period, but between 20 and 30 other animals whose names read like an absolutely fantastic roll call for like an old-timey gangster movie.
Yep.
Because you've got Stranger, Jackson, Big Ben, Sharky, Walker, Little Jack, Skinner, Montague, and it just goes on and on.
Oh, it's a Guy Ritchie film.
So it's, yeah, it is. Yeah. Because there was like, there was, as well as Little Jack, there was Big Jack.
Did you like it? Because two of them were called Jack.
Big Jack and Little Jack. Yeah. But like, there was, I think there was, as well as the Big Ben, there was a Little Ben as well.
Yeah. Once again, Roddy.
Yeah.
Cast to the wayside.
There wasn't an orca named Roderick, actually.
Classic. It's like when you're at school and you go on a school trip somewhere and everyone comes out, oh, look, this pencil case has my name on it. This one goes out to everyone whose name was never on a pencil case in a gift shop.
Or the little keychain.
Exactly. It's just not there.
You're probably more likely to find Sharky than you are.
Yeah.
Okay, so as well as eating seals and dolphins, the pod come to this area specifically because they're a big fan of the huge migrating baleen whales that come to the area. So we're talking humpback, minke whale, baleen, the big filter feeders.
Hmm.
And the Port of Eden, so that's this town, sits right at the entrance of a bay called Twofold Bay. And the bay itself plays a really important role in the orca's hunting strategy. So you all know what bays are like, little bowls. And when the hunt is on, the pod would drive whales into the bay. So you've got this group of 20 to 30 orca. Baleen whale comes in. They're like, right, food time. They drive the whale into the bay, and then the pod split into three different groups. And the three different groups all have three different jobs. The first group basically patrols the edge of the bay and stops the baleen whale from being able to escape. A second pod then dives underneath the baleen whale to stop it from diving down and escaping. And then the third pod of orca launch the attack. So your big pod splits into three. We've talked about the different hunting strategies before in our older episode on orcas. This is classic orca playbook hunting big whales wheelhouse. But old Tom would then go and do something very unique. Old Tom would then swim to the very centre of the bay. So imagine your bay as a bowl. Imagine like a C shape. That's what it looks like facing out onto the east coast of Australia.
Yep.
So you've got your C-shaped bay. In the very middle of that sea, you have a whaling station.
Okay.
Run by the Davidson family, who are Scottish settlers, which have settled in Australia at this point. And the Davidson family hunt big whales. And they do this using traditional techniques that the native Australians would have done beforehand. So they use, rather than motor boats and gun-powered harpoons,
they're artisan.
They, right. If we were still selling whales today, they would be at the Christmas markets charging five times more than the whale you bought at Tesco.
They're independently family caught, organic, free-range humpback, a cut of minke.
So they were hunting the whales out of this bay. And they, like I say, they were doing it in this very traditional manner. So you've got whaling station in the middle of the bay. The orca are on the attack. Old Tom peels off, swims in front of the whaling station and begins to slap his tail on the water's surface to attract the attention of people on the shore. Old Tom, the sly dog.
He's got tricks up his sleeve.
He's got tricks. So the whalers would take to the sea. They'd see old Tom slapping his tail. They'd know what was happening. And they'd get into the boats. There's then some reports that old Tom would grab the harpoon line and pull the rowboats out to where they needed to go. So he'd take it in his teeth. And then swim, like, because they're only in these little, there's actually some pictures of old Tom swimming alongside these boats. And they're really narrow little, you know, well, they're rowboats. Yeah, like they look like big, long canoes. So, yeah, there were reports that he would then take the rope and then swim them out to where they needed to go. Once they reached the whale, they'd work with the orca to harpoon it and bring down the large whale. If a whaler fell into the water whilst on the hunt, it's said that the orca would rally round the whaler to protect them until they made it back onto the boat. And if an orca became tangled in a harpoon line, then it would wait to be cut free by the whalers.
Oh my God.
So as you can see, this is the story of old Tom and his pretty extraordinary relationship of his pod with the whaling activity that was happening in this particular bay in Australia.
Man, I need this to be a Guy Ritchie film.
It would be so cool if
Jason Statham played the orca.
He would play. Which one would he play? What of? I mean, there's, I think 21 of them were named. I only wrote down a few here.
But when you've got acting talents like Jason Statham, you don't say which one. You say all of them.
In the same way that, what was it? Tom Hanks played everybody in motion capture in the Polar Express.
Yeah.
We'd have Jason Statham just mo-capping all of them.
You think motion capture?
Practical effects.
When I say, when you have the acting talents of Jason Statham and you get called upon by your friend Guy Ritchie to play 21 Australian orcas, you don't ask who's doing the CGI.
You just say, hand me the paint. And we know he's got the acting chops for marine based, for he has famously played a marine biologist in two films,
The Meg,
The Meg 2, The Trench.
What more training do you need?
And I think I did, it was like a one sentence mention when we talked about orca hunting whales in the original episode. I think I mentioned that there were some orca somewhere that had cooperatively hunted with humans, but I didn't know the story, and that's what I want to talk about a little bit. What's interesting is that this relationship is a really old one. So old Tom specifically is one that we can focus in on because there were lots written about him. There were lots of stories that were just passed on through time because it happened in relatively recent history. But it's said that the native Australian groups that were living by the sea had these relationships with orcas for a long time. They actually referred to them as, and I may not pronounce this right, but Biawas, which means brothers. So that's what they would call the orca. They believe that they were reincarnated ancestors, particularly of whalers, because they would help the native Australians to make a kill. So you've got this relationship of orcas working with people. And one of the reasons that the Davidson Whaling Station had such a close relationship with old Tom and his pod was because even though the Davidsons were Scottish immigrants, they employed Indigenous Australians as a big part of the whaling crew. And they were said, from what I read, they were treated on equal terms as the white people, and they were, you know, they were employed under the same terms. So they had this knowledge of the orca being a big part of helping you hunt whales, and that's why it persisted when other European cultures didn't necessarily respect the relationship and what the orca could do for you. So the people did genuinely seem to really love old Tom. This was great. His identifiable features, as I've mentioned, his really long dorsal fin, but genuinely recorded as a way to identify old Tom was his sense of humour. It's just said he was identified by his extra long dorsal fin and his sense of humour.
Always cracking jokes.
I wanted to posit to you, you're someone who's dabbled in stand-up comedy, what kind of comic do you think an orca would be? Do you think it would have a good sense of humour?
It'd be very black and white stuff. Everyone would have a whale of a time.
That's why you can see, listener, that Ronnie Shaw dabbled in stand-up comedy.
Yeah, dabbled is the key word.
I think orca would just punch down in their comedy.
Yeah,
the whole time. Because they
can seals.
Well, exactly. You know, they can't stick it to the man because there's no man above them.
Yeah. It'd be like if The Rock did stand up or something. A stand up set from Jeff Bezos or something.
Yeah. It's like, they are. Yeah. They're the yeah. Like, what do they joke about? What does Jeff Bezos talk about? The name Tom actually appears to have originated from tomfoolery because of his antics. And his early nickname, before being known as Old Tom, was Tom the Humorist, which is mentioned in Davidson's family diaries. So I think it's probably for the best that he had a rebrand.
Yeah.
Because, by Jove, chaps, here comes Tom the Humorist.
Yeah. At 40 knots and bearing west.
So the question is, what's in it for the orca?
Yes.
Why are the orca doing it?
Well, my guess is that the humans only wanted one particular bit of the whale, like
I mean, it's not paraffin, but like the oil.
Well, so this is it. Do you know? Do you know which bit of the whales were important to the whalers?
Was it the blubber?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And another bit.
Well, I know in sperm whales, it's the head,
the
bit,
special sonar bit, isn't it? That they use for sonar, but it's not in the because they're one of the toothed whales. So
yep.
Not in these ones.
The blubber and some other oily, like the liver.
No,
is it an organ?
No.
Eyelashes.
No. You see them on the coasts here in England. They make arches out of them.
The bones.
Apparently whalebone corsets and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, whalebone corsets. I have heard of that.
So bone and blubber is what humans want from the whales, which obviously is not. The orcas are suddenly starting to wear corsets. Not something that orca are particularly interested in.
No.
So the humans are after the blubber and bone, whereas the orca are obviously after the food. So there was this thing that was known as the law of tongue.
Yep.
And the law of tongue was basically this unspoken rule that once the whale had been killed, you would anchor the whale down to the seafloor or close to the shore for the orca to feed on the carcass. So your kill would have been made. You would have gone out there with your harpoon. You would have harpooned the whale that the orca had driven into the bay. Once it had died, you would then anchor it to the floor, tie it to the shore, and you would let the orca have their fill. Because in general, what the orca would go for first, particularly the tongue and the lips of the whale, is what they like to eat. Well, they would tear into the other bits, but it's harder for them to tear into the other bits.
Right.
But what we did see when we spoke about them hunting blue whales in the earlier episode was they always went for the tongue first, and they'd rip out the tongue of the blue whale and they'd chew on its lips and all that sort of stuff.
I remember the tongue being the key featurey bit. I can't remember every bit of the blue whale chat, but I mean, a blue whale is massive.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, even a smaller whale, I just would have thought an orca would eat it all.
I would have thought that, especially when there's between 20 and 30 of them.
Yeah.
You think, surely they've all got to take a piece.
A bite.
But apparently they wouldn't really touch the blubber, and they obviously certainly wouldn't touch the bone, which is what the whalers wanted. So it's this relationship between, particularly old Tom, as he was the most recognisable one, and the Davidson family went across three generations of the Davidson family. And they say that he was present for around 80 years.
Because he was a present at their births. he was a witness for two marriages.
They got married in the shallows so he could be the best man and give a speech.
He spoke at some of the funerals.
But he was around. And the Davidson family, some of them even claimed that the reason that they didn't use motorboats or gun-powered harpoons was not to scare the orca off, was that they wanted to use the traditional methods of hunting because it wouldn't scare the orca away and wouldn't mean that they would keep coming into the bay and they could keep up this relationship.
But so then from the orca's perspective, they drove the whale in.
Yeah.
And then the humans did all the work killing it.
Well, the orca would be attacking it as well, so...
Oh, so it was just a team.
Yeah. So the orca would be doing their classic thing of when they're attacking it, you know, they've got a pod, they've got a group of orca underneath stopping it from diving, and then the orca that are attacking are doing the classic, like, jumping on top of it, trying to force it under, trying to wear it out, and then the people would come up, harpoon it, and obviously once they've got the harpoon in it, then it's dragging the boat along too, and just a culmination of this would just tire out and kill the whale, and then they'd share it.
God, I mean, it's amazing, but I just... It still sounds to me like the orcas are doing most of the work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Why don't they just finish the job?
Yeah, yeah.
But then I guess maybe the humans are able to quicken that process.
Yeah.
Because I think, if I remember rightly, when they were killing the blue whales, and obviously some of them are bigger, but I think we talked about them killing a couple of juvenile whales, those hunts lasted for hours, some of them.
Yeah.
Whereas if you can just... call the human over to give you a hand.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it obviously worked.
So, like I say, this happened for 80-odd years or so. So what happened to old Tom in the end and this pod of orca? Because obviously with the end of whaling and all that sort of stuff, it started to decline, whaling, in about 1901. Now, this is interesting. It particularly started to decline around the Eden area because one of Old Tom's pod, so this is an orca called either Typee or Tippy, T-Y-P-E-E, got stranded on the shore alongside a minke whale. So they both got stranded on the shore of Twofold Bay.
I'm just picturing this. Hang on. So the bay is there.
Yeah.
Statham appears. Black and white. I'm seeing a panning camera.
So
soft focus as he flounders in the shallows.
Can he flounder? Can he appear vulnerable?
You don't ask if Statham can flounder.
Just look at his Oscar nominations.
I know.
They'll tell you that. So Typee or Tippy is stranded on the shore. While stuck, a local man called Harry Silks, we need a villain. This is Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh.
Harry Silks. Because he comes along while Typee is stranded and knifes it to death.
Now, are we saying Mikkelsen?
I was just thinking villain character, and he's always a villain.
He is always a villain, but he's never a Guy Ritchie. I would like to posit Vinnie Jones.
Vinnie Jones or Ray Winston.
Yes, here we go. Now we're back in.
Ray Winston, this fucking orc. Okay, so yeah, and the problem with this is this caused massive uproar amongst the indigenous Australian whalers because they'd obviously got a really close tie to this orca pod, and because a European had come along and stabbed a member of their much-loved pod, they left the bay. Like, the workforce just left. The indigenous Australians were so up in arms that one of their orca had been killed that they left the bay. And this was happening at the time where there were alternatives to whale oil starting to be made and a decline in the whale numbers themselves because so many were being hunted, put an end to whaling in that particular bay. But the whaling might not be happening anymore. Through a combination of lack of whales, half your workforce leaving because Ray Winston's just stabbed one of their favourite orcas. But old Tom kept returning. He kept coming back because obviously these are really, really long-lived animals, and I said that he was active in the bay till 1930.
Yeah.
Whaling starts to decline in 1901.
Yeah.
So he's still got
29 years.
Yeah, left. So he keeps coming back to the bay, although increasingly he starts to come back with fewer and fewer of his pod until eventually he's just coming back on his own.
So there's quite an emotional journey here for Statham to portray.
There is.
Over that 29 year, I'm thinking montage.
Luckily he's capable of it.
Playing fewer and fewer. Well, we're talking about the man who was in 3 of the 10 Fast and the Furious movies.
You know? Yep. Well aware.
Old 4 of the 10.
4?
I know.
Is that because they've just released another one in the last 5 minutes? So, old Tom keeps coming back to Twofold Bay until he's just turning up on his own. And the locals believe that the rest of his pod were killed further north on the Australian coast by Norwegian whalers. Because the problem was that many of the Europeans that were coming down and whaling off the coast of Australia were completely unaware of the relationship between orca and the whalers and saw them as competition. So basically, we're just, you know, if you were out hunting whales and you saw orca, you would shoot at them, you would harpoon them, you would try and kill them because you saw them as competition for the whales that you were after. And then we get to the death of old Tom.
Oh.
It wasn't a particularly dramatic death, but on the 17th of September, 1930, he's found washed up on the shores of Twofold Bay. The cause of his death was probably just old age or starvation, because orca really commonly die of starvation in their old age. I was reading about this. They get these, their teeth get worn down really, really dramatically.
Yeah.
To the extent where you're exposing the roots and they get abscesses.
Oh.
And yeah, like they really commonly, because they're such long-lived animals,
yes,
they really commonly just get worn down teeth. And also when they were able to examine his teeth, they could see the marks from where he'd carried the ropes.
Oh,
when
God.
Because apparently he had this real thing about just messing around with ropes and dragging ropes. And apparently you could see Wow. The way he used to carry them in his mouth, you could see that they were the teeth were slightly more abraded in those areas.
What the hell were they making the ropes out of? Jesus Christ.
Steel girders.
Yeah. Well, it'd have to be for Statham.
Well, of course.
You know, yeah. This is a man who voiced a character in 2011's Romeo and Juliet. So I think some artistic license on the death, and he can bring in everything that he brought to Crank 2 High Voltage.
Jason Statham can't starve to death, can he?
No.
I think we need him to go down in a blaze of glory.
Against Ray Winston.
Against, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's got to get revenge on Harry Silks.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. So there had been some debate about old Tom's sex. Obviously not if it's Jason Statham.
No, of course. This is a man who is in 2023's Expendables 4 Expendables.
Listener, can you tell that Ronnie's got the IMDb, IMDb page?
Absolutely not. I'm just a fan of his work.
Did you know, this is a side that probably won't make it in, but I actually saw him in the summer.
Was it in 2016's Mechanic Resurrection?
No, it was in 2023's or 2024's The Beehive or Beekeeper.
The Beekeeper.
Beekeeper. Yep. I saw him jumping over a fake balcony that they'd built on the shores in Dorset that was supposed to be the Mediterranean. I saw him with his little toy gun jumping over onto a crash mat.
See, this is what I mean. Any man who can sell Dorset as the Med,
well,
can play 21 Orcas in the Bay of Eden.
So, old Tom, he's washed up. He's been found dead, died of starvation, old age, and he's worn down teeth. There had been some debate about his sex, as orcopods are usually run by a matriarch. But when he washed up, they were able to confirm that he was a male. And it may have just been that he was actually never in charge at all. But because he was stood out as being the most recognisable orca,
yep,
he was the one that people just thought was in charge. But actually, there probably was a matriarch running the pod.
Yeah.
Classic case of men getting the credit where they maybe don't deserve it.
Yeah, which is why it's the role.
A famed feminist.
Jason Statham.
Any film you want to throw in there to show his feminist credentials?
Star of 2011's Blitz. Of the 51 film posters he's on as part of his film career, 12 also feature women, one of which being Juliet of Romeo and Juliet. So he's the man for the job.
Yeah. So, old Tom, you can still go and see him because his bones were kept and preserved, and his skeleton is on display at the Eden Killer Whale Museum, which tells this whole story and has the pictures and all this sort of stuff that you can go and learn about the Davidson family, the indigenous Australian whalers, and old Tom's pod, and the amazing cooperative relationship that these whalers and these orca had over this really long period. And that's the story of old Tom and his pod, and with him, the remarkable killer whales and their whole way of life has now gone extinct. And there are still no orca left, really, in that part of Australia.
Well, Mr. Ritchie, when you do get the script together, feel free to reach out. We're happy to consult.
Yeah, I can send you these notes.
Yeah.
I'll pop them over in an email.
Yeah.
I assume it's guy.ritchie@films.com.
And it's obviously Jason Statham at Jason Statham.
Yeah.
No .com.
Yeah.
For Jason Statham. It's Jason Statham at Jason Statham dot Jason Statham.
Did you know, fun fact as well, did you know that he was born in a town 15 minutes from here?
I mean, it's
from where we're sat. So we're currently sat, listener, in North Derbyshire.
Elastic FM.
In Elastic FM, shout out. There is a town 15 minutes drive away from here called Shirebrook.
Yep.
Which has a reputation for being, let's just say, rough.
Okay.
And that's where Jason Statham was born. So it's all coming together.
Yeah, it is. Are there statues of him there? Can we go check it out?
No, there are no statues of him there.
Yet. Wait till the BAFTAs come pouring in for this.
They're just waiting for that Oscar bait that is the story of the whales of Eden. So there you go. That's the story of old Tom and an amazing relationship between the orcas and the whalers of southeastern Australia.
Lovely. It's time for the birder section.
Yeah.
Which this week, Jack Badhams, is
dial B for birder. Now, that's a bit of a niche reference, but for all you 1950s Hitchcock film fans, there was a film called Dial M for Murder.
Not only does he set them up, but he'll take them through it if you don't know what he's on about.
I'll hold your hand, walk you through it.
That's science communication at its finest. I have to say as well that I can't remember what the first ever one you had was, but I do remember it being awful. So
it's peaks and troughs.
Peaks and troughs, right. So for anyone unfamiliar, Bird is a free app which helps you reconnect with nature by guiding you through bird watching, giving you challenges to compete in, some of which have prizes as well. You can win sort of binoculars and other bits and bobs. Whether you're a novice, your first time bird watching, or experienced, it's a great way to just help you get outside and motivated in logging the natural world. You can do a single sighting on it. You can log a whole birding session if you're going for a big walk or big run and you want to do birding at speed.
Big sit.
Big sit. A big cycle might not be...
No.
I guess you could stop at every bird you saw. Yeah. How many geese does not endorse?
Birding while cycling.
But Team Goose, I hear you cry. I wouldn't know a crow from a cow. Well, don't worry.
No, please do.
Bird has a whole community logged on there which can help you ID any of the birds you see. You can take a picture of it if you don't know what it is, and other people can help ID it. But not just that, there's an entire species guide and inventory built into the app which can suggest things based on where you are in the world. It will show you where things have been seen in your area, so it can, you know, suggest, oh, this park has had loads of activity, let me go down there and see. And for people listening in the UK, it now includes birdsong in the species guide. So we are going to look at a couple standout species from the Bird app. And this week, Jack, we're crossing the Atlantic.
Ooh.
We're then crossing the continent.
Oh.
To visit the Andean condor.
Oh, so we're crossing the, we're going down.
We are going down.
Diagonal.
Diagonal. This is the Andean condor of Chile.
Are they in Chile?
The Andean condor is the national bird of Chile, which makes it about as in Chile.
Fair enough.
As you can be.
I'm just thinking about my travels in Peru, darling. Just thinking about, you know, how that they were there. But I suppose they probably just go all the way down the Andes.
Again, Andean condor.
I'm just going to stop talking in this segment.
It is, I mean, you know, you can start talking again, because what do we know about the Andean condor?
They're big.
Yeah.
Boy, are they big.
Yeah.
Do they have the biggest wingspan, or is that the wandering albatross? They're certainly up there. They've got a giant wingspan.
So, Birders Fact File is letting us know that the wandering albatross has a wingspan of 11 feet.
That's ridiculous.
The Andean condor clocks in at 10 feet 10 inches.
Oh, it's close.
So, there's an extra inch per wing. Mm. Or maybe the wandering albatross have one wing 2 inches longer than the other, and that helps them circumnavigate the globe by just travelling in an absolutely huge circle. But it says that the Andean condor has the largest wingspan surface area.
Okay, that would make sense.
Of any bird.
Yeah, because the albatross, although they have really long wings, they're quite narrow, whereas the Andean condor, like vultures... I mean, condors are basically giant vultures. They don't hunt prey themselves. They scavenge, and to ride those thermals, whereas the albatrosses are riding on the winds that are the maritime winds over the ocean, the condors and the vultures have huge, broad wings for circling. So, yeah, it's going to have a massive surface area.
And that's basically the albatross wing is cutting through wind, whereas the condor vulture wing needs surface area because the heat is coming up, so they need to...
So it's catching it.
Like a hot air balloon.
Yeah. It's catching those thermals rising up and catching it so it can soar higher.
Now, people may have heard of condors in general because they're quite threatened. The Andean condor's threatened with extinction. It can live to up to 50 years because they've got no natural predators, which is generally quite a nice position to be in. However, it also means they've got a much lower reproduction rate and they only reach maturity at age 6.
Yeah.
Which, is that the oldest of a bird?
There are... Yeah. Well, thinking through it now, they're probably just going to be run close by things like eagles. We have white-tailed eagles in the UK. They reach it about 4 or 5. There's maybe some cranes or something that might reach it at a certain age. Parrots as well that can live quite long. But yeah, they'll They'll certainly be high up there.
Up there. Up there. So I mentioned that Birder can let you know what's been seen in your area or where birds have been seen. Has this been logged on Birder? Yes.
Has
in
it?
Chile's Torres del Paine.
Oh.
Del Paine? P-A-I-N-E. National Park.
Mm.
And there's a whole suite of amazing pictures that have been submitted to the app from people who've seen it there.
Yeah, I'd love to see an Andean condor.
Shall we go?
Yeah, let's go to Chile.
All right, we're off.
It's time for that part of the show where we take one of nature's magnificent creatures and we pit it against Roddy Shaw in a fight to the death. Now, today's animal has been submitted by Orla, who's only 8 years old and apparently is a big fan of the show.
That's good, isn't it?
It's good. It's not our place to say, you know, who should or shouldn't be listening to how many geese. She apparently very much likes listening to us when she goes to sleep. She finds us very funny.
Oh.
And she's wanted to submit an animal.
Okay.
Because she really likes this segment.
Do we know Orla?
Orla is a friend's child.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
So she's a very big fan of the show. So Orla, this is your suggestion, and it is a leopard.
Okay.
Now, I think this is the first big cat we've ever done on the fight segment.
Yes.
So we're talking about a serious foe here. Hailing from, well, a lot of the world, actually. Leopards have an incredibly wide distribution, being found anywhere from Turkey through Africa, the Arabian Peninsula, into Asia, the Indian subcontinent, Indonesia, China, the Russian Far East. Leopards have got a huge distribution. One of the largest distribution of any wild cat on the planet. So not even just big cat, any wild cat on the planet, the leopard's got the biggest distribution. In terms of terrain, they're extraordinarily adaptable. They'll live in the African savanna, the dense rainforests of Java, the arid landscapes of Arabia, to the vast forests of the Russian Far East, the really, really cold ones. Because the Amur leopard is just a subspecies of the leopard. There's like 5 or 6 different subspecies of leopard, but here we're just grouping them all together. So they can live from the humid tropical forests to forests where the temperatures can drop down to minus 25 degrees Celsius. They'll also live alongside people, particularly in India, where there's a well-established population living in developed areas. I don't know if you've seen, there was a BBC documentary, a nature documentary, where they went and filmed leopards hunting in, like, the suburbs at night. It's really cool, and they got, like, thermal cameras, and they're filming them hunting people's pigs in, like, their back gardens, and there's just these leopards, like, sneaking across rooftops and stuff like that. It's very, very cool. Some stats for you. They can run at 36 miles an hour. They've got a 6-meter horizontal jump and a 3-meter vertical one.
Well, unlucky for them, I can hit 37 miles an hour. I can clear 6.5 meters, and whatever the other one was, I'm better at that as well.
They hunt a huge variety of prey, but they specialise in medium-sized deer and antelope. The largest prey ever recorded, a leopard taking, was a male eland, weighing in at about 900 kilos. Once they've snuck up on their prey, pounced, grabbed it by the throat and suffocated them, they'll often drag their prey to store it, often up trees, so that it's away from things that might try and scavenge hyenas and lions and things like that. One leopard was seen hauling a 125-kilo young giraffe almost 6 metres up into a tree after it had killed it. Attacks on humans, important part for this segment, are not unusual. In Nepal, the rate of leopard predation on humans is 16 times higher than anywhere else, resulting in an average of 55 people being killed per year by leopards. So I'd suggest maybe this fight doesn't take place in Nepal. Mm. There have also been some pretty famous man-eaters over time, with some individuals getting a proper taste for human prey, and there's some out there that have had like 20-odd kills to their name.
Her name's Madonna.
I did find this bit of inspiration for you, though, just to finish. It is possible for humans to fight against a leopard and win, as in the case of a 56-year-old woman who killed an attacking leopard with a sickle and spade and survived with heavy injuries, and the case of a 73-year-old man in Kenya who fatally tore the tongue out of a leopard.
Jesus Christ.
I never about that, right? That's hardcore. So, Roddy Shaw, bearing all that in mind, how many leopards are too many leopards?
Okay. First of all, thanks for listening to the show, Orla. And thank you for such a challenge. Right. Is there something about fighting a leopard that means I need to be old to win?
Well, I did think that because the two people that it specifically listed that have beaten them were, 56 and 73.
Yes. They're in the kind of the autumn
era. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Right. I don't have any sickles immediately to hand. Not that logical sense has ever played a part in this.
Well, let's think terrain, I think, is a good place to start. Because often it's, well, let's think of a terrain that they're uncomfortable on.
Yeah.
But for the leopard, yeah, there's going to be few and far terrains that they actually are going to struggle with.
Yeah, I can't even move it into like an urban area.
No.
Because they've got that. And I don't particularly... I mean, even if I said like Antarctica, not that I'm suited to Antarctica, but they're suited to Nepal.
Well, they can tag team in any subspecies that they need to, because often I'll narrow this down to a particular species. If someone was to suggest something like a bear or a pangolin, I'd pick a particular species. But because there is only one species of leopard, but split into different subspecies that are adapted for different habitats, wherever you pick, they're just going to tag team in the relevant leopard.
Yeah, the chef leopard for the kitchen fight.
Exactly.
It's like a when you like unlock a character and again, it's got all its skins.
Exactly. It's like scrolling through the different skins that you can put on it. The fluffier one, the, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Do we think leopards hate jaguars?
Well, the only thing I would say is obviously leopard widely... most widely distributed cat on the planet. It hasn't conquered the Americas. Maybe in its bid for world domination, it's a little bit put out that it's not conquered the Americas, because it is in, I suppose it's not got Oceania either. I'm just wondering whether it's got, whether it, you know, looks over at the Americas and the jaguar has filled its role there.
Okay, I know where I fight a leopard.
Mm.
Vegas.
Right.
Because I reckon Vegas has the highest concentration of lasers in the world.
Mm.
And if there's anything cats love...
Oh, okay.
It's a laser pointer.
Yes.
I want to fight a leopard at, like... you know that new Las Vegas sphere?
Oh, with the face and it's looking around.
And it can they can do any light show, anything, anything, anything.
Yeah, listener, if you don't know what the Las Vegas sphere is, and you can Google it right now... please do, because it's an amazing and also slightly dystopian thing.
Yeah, it's, well, it's a sphere.
Yeah, it's so Las Vegas.
Yeah, yeah. It's a concert hall, which is absolutely massive and covered in LEDs, and it can project any image anywhere, anytime, whatever, whatever, right? And I'm going to take a guess that if you had, oh my God, you could have as many, if you had a laser pointer on it for like every leopard, you could distract...
every leopard.
Countless leopards.
Yeah.
So, theory one, sphere laser pointers. Mm-hmm. And we go down that route. We'll crunch the numbers in a minute, but put it on the board.
Yeah.
Theory two. This is leaning slightly more into the video game character selection.
Uh-huh.
It is leaning slightly more into Photoshop. I still need somewhere to display what I'm going to get to.
Okay.
And so the sphere could still be that venue,
okay,
just on being a massive screen. But we're aware, Jack, of the phrase a leopard can't change its spots.
We are.
So what if I Photoshop different spots on leopards and just break their psyche?
Yeah.
Because they will then look at a wall of many leopards, of many spots, and psychologically be broken.
Hang on, though. But do you think that the phrase a leopard can't change its spots is because they really want to? And you could set yourself up as some sort of cosmetic surgery.
A spot merchant.
You could have, like, you know, Roddy's spot merchant, where, you know, the leopards have been constantly not happy with their appearance for whatever reason. And but the phrase they've always told their kids is, well, a leopard can't change its spots.
But inside,
they want, you know, they want it. Maybe they want stripes. They look at the zebras and they think, I could do with some stripes. Or they look at other spots and they think, oh, maybe I'll just make my spots a little bit more jazzy. Along come you in the coat and the glasses so they don't know it's you. And you're like, hello, it's Roddy Short here to, you know, like roll up, sort of like rolling into town with a wagon.
Yeah.
Photoshop.
As I do. Anyway.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
All the time.
Yeah.
Rolling up. Opening the hatches of your wooden box that's being drawn on the back of a cart, and on it are all the photographs of leopards that you've deviously changed in Photoshop.
Exactly.
And then you're like, please step into my studio.
Yes.
And they're all, you know, ready and willing to have their
Victorian photographer's booth.
Yes.
Type with the flash that goes
yeah.
You know, and the little cloak I put over myself.
I mean, it doesn't really need to be old timey. You could just have a
old timey.
Okay, it's old timey.
I want a monocle. Okay. And a flash that goes
but maybe that's what they've craved.
Yeah.
Maybe the leopard wants to change its spots and you can get them when their guard's down.
And where better to reinvent yourself than Vegas?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're saying every leopard is trying to conquer the Americas.
Mm-hmm.
And I am...
So they've launched an armada across the Atlantic because they want to take over the Americas.
They're coming Atlantic, they're going Pacific.
They're leaving from Africa, surely.
Okay, and they're landing on the East Coast.
Oh, God, yeah, and then they're getting a train across. They're getting an internal flight.
Okay, so they've landed on the East Coast. They've gotten an internal flight. So then, this is all very important stuff.
Yeah.
What we're talking about is one short-haul flight's worth of leopard.
So they're doing Boston to Las Vegas. Yeah.
So,
how many people are on an average plane? I don't know.
Oh, let's hang
Here
on.
Here we go.
Yeah.
That's the sound of the Roddy Shaw keyboard clacking away in the flight segment that we've come to know and love.
Okay, I've just gone Boeing 737 because that might do it.
Yeah.
And a Boeing 737 can take between 85 to 200 people.
Okay.
I will go at the lower end. And a leopard might take up more room than a person. They're not used to...
Oh, no, I think a leopard and a human are pretty... Like, you know, if it was sat in a seat, I think it'd sit quite comfortably in a human seat.
So you think 215 leopards in Vegas?
I do not think you could fight 215 leopards
but
anywhere.
But I've got a flash that goes... And there's going to be so many lasers distracting them.
And they're all going to be hoping for some nice stripes when they come out the end of it.
Yeah.
I still don't think you can take 215 leopards.
No, not but I can...
85 on the lower end.
Let's go to the lower end. Why are we being specific to plane? The lower end of a domestic internal flight from Boston to Vegas worth of leopards.
Okay.
Maybe it's a really luxury... Maybe it's like Floyd Mayweather. You know when they fly like 12 celebs?
Yeah.
It's one of these very small private planes.
Well, if they're paying for the sort of cosmetic surgery that you are...
These are wealthy leopards.
It's like people who fly to Turkey to get their teeth done.
Exactly.
They're flying to Vegas.
To reinvent their spots. They've heard legend. They get there and they come out and each one gets caught by a different... I'm really leaning into this laser pointer idea because I think a leopard with a laser pointer is just fun.
Yeah.
They're on the strip. There's lasers going everywhere. They're doing the little paw thing across the floor.
Yeah.
But one by one, they notice the old-timey roll up, come get your spots changed.
Yeah.
They're looking around at the other leopards to see, God, no one's looking. Maybe now I can sneak away. Mm. And I basically take off each one by one.
I see.
They come in, startle them with the...
Yeah.
And then leave them.
Yeah.
They come in, they see the spots. They see pictures of leopards who have had their spots changed. They come in and I go, but your spots can't be changed. And that, exactly. Dagger
right
to
the
leopard heart.
Yeah.
And then they're broken emotionally. Yeah.
Do you think that if 12 leopards were chasing lasers around on the Vegas Strip, anyone would bat an eyelid?
No. Not at all.
No.
Which also, just in a bigger sense, if there's a police force in the world who can deal with escaped and wealthy big cats.
It's, Las Vegas Police Department.
Okay, well, let's go with 12.
Perfect.
Okay, we have a question here from Olivia Fern on Instagram at How Many Geese, who asks, what animal would you pick to be your vehicle on Rainbow Road? You're the driver.
Right.
So, Jack Badhams, how familiar are you with Mario Kart?
I've played it.
Yep.
I came to it later in life. Yeah. Not played it as a kid.
Yeah.
Played it maybe talking 4 or 5 years ago with my cousins.
Yeah.
And they were big into it.
Okay.
So I'm not a seasoned veteran, But Rainbow Road, if I remember rightly, is one of the hardest, or the hardest.
It's chaos.
One, because you just keep falling off the edges.
Yeah.
It's that one, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm right.
So it's like a rainbow in space.
Yeah.
Of madness, loop-de-loops, bends. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, of course, you've got all of the Mario Kart shenanigans.
Trying to throw bananas at you.
Shells
you
flying
up,
around. Mushrooms. Bombs. Fires.
Yeah.
You know, pits of despair.
Yeah.
Left, right, and center. But also coins. So, you know. That's why we play the game. So, what animal would you pick to be the vehicle? You're the driver.
Because you pick your character and then you pick the vehicle separately, don't you? So the character is me.
Yep.
And then I'm now scrolling through the list of animals.
Yep.
Ready to pick my vehicle. Well, and we've got the stick, because there's stats, isn't there, next to them? It's like speed.
Yes.
I can't remember exactly what they are, but I know there's a speed one and there's whatever. Okay. Right. So.
My first thought.
Go.
As you mentioned, one of the big things with Rainbow Road is falling off the edge.
Yeah.
Gecko.
Right. Yeah.
Some kind of giant gecko.
I was thinking of something that's going to be able to just grip on and throw itself back on. But a gecko, you could just carry on the race from underneath.
Assuming you're stuck to it.
Oh, okay. That's true.
Your car keeps going.
Yeah.
And you just fall out of the convertible.
Yeah.
So a gecko with a roof.
You'd want to be strapped into the gecko, wouldn't you?
However, counterpoint to the gecko, I don't... Well, actually, let's take a step back. Are we saying that whichever animal we choose can get scaled to our size?
I think we're going to have to. Okay. Otherwise, we're limited to the animals that humans have already tried to ride in the past.
Yeah.
Which is a too narrow field.
It's a very narrow field.
Yeah, for us to seriously consider this question.
And I think just as a human species, we should have dreamed bigger.
Yeah, like our ambition is poor.
Yes.
There's only one bird. We could do better with that, I'm sure.
Have you ever ridden an ostrich?
No. I don't have any plans to anytime soon either.
You wouldn't give it a go?
No. No.
100 pounds?
No.
1,000 pounds?
Yeah, okay.
500 pounds? 30 seconds on it.
Somewhere between 500 and a third. Maybe it's the 700 mark is when I shake your hand.
Okay.
And get on that ostrich.
So if any listeners out there have access to an ostrich, I've started a GoFundMe.
An ostrich is definitely not my choice for Rainbow Road.
No.
Fast, but I feel like they're easily going to be knocked off their stride with all the other Mario Kart shenanigans. If they lose their footing or they start wobbling a little bit, they're straight over the edge.
So let's put some categories on the board. You need robustness to Mario Kart shenanigans.
Yeah.
You need a level of traction because Rainbow Road falling off the edge. You need speed.
Mm-hmm.
You need, I was going to say comfort. We're scaling all the animals up too. So
yeah,
that's kind of taken care of. Yeah. Anything else beyond those big three?
Fast. What about built-in weapons?
Oh,
because we're going to be able to pick up, we're going to be able to smash into the crate, and we're going to be able to be given our, whatever mystery weapon that we're going to get, the mushrooms or whatever. But if I've got a spider, can I just use the web string across the track?
Was there anything else which could
be used as a weapon?
Well, I was going to say a chameleon could
with its tongue. Yeah.
That'd maybe you could get the box before your competitor's going for it, and
that's
you can.
A good one. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Not particularly fast, though, the chameleon.
No. And it
even
would...
with Rainbow Road, though, just disappear.
Yes.
Listeners, once again, this is the chameleon caveat that we always do. We know chameleons don't camouflage, and it's all mood dependent.
But do you think it'd actually be too much for the chameleon?
It'd just be like, whoa. Its eyes would just start going independently round and round and round.
Okay.
I think a spider, just going on your gecko thoughts, gonna stick. Some spiders are pretty fast. They rush things, don't they? And then also I've got a built-in web situation.
I was going to say tiger beetle.
Yeah.
Which are very, very fast. But then I remembered that our entomologist friend Ash Whiffin from All Aboard the Beetle Bus told us that tiger beetles can run so fast that their eyes stop.
Yeah, they basically can't process all the information because they're running so fast that they have to stop and essentially let their eyes catch up with their speed.
Yeah.
So that they can absorb all that visual information before they set off going again.
Which is,
so that sounds like a terrible idea for Rainbow Road.
Yeah, and also just impossible to get your head round in general. Mm. But I think you'd immediately, even though it can grip, you'd be going so far, you'd just be blindly firing yourself off the edge in every direction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bad times.
Not a good one. What about things that fly, okay? Or are we strictly limiting ourselves to being on the road itself? Is it against the spirit of Mario Kart? Even if we're hovering just above the surface on a giant dragonfly, is it against the spirit of Mario Kart for us to be off terra firma?
I think so. Thinking in a very video game sense,
yeah,
you could have a flying thing, but it would literally just be like
hovering above.
The graphics, you know, it would just be rendered as flying.
It's still obeying the laws that everybody else
is. The moment it went off the road,
yeah,
it would fall. Yeah. So I can't actually think what that would bring you.
Okay.
I think spider.
I think maybe bears. Okay. Bears are fast.
Yeah.
Bears are strong.
Yeah.
Tanks.
Toughness. Like, can take a beating.
I think that they're just hench, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they're surprisingly quick.
Yeah.
And they've got good grip because they climb trees and things. So it's going to be able to dig its nails into Rainbow Road when it starts seeing it going off the edge.
Yeah.
I think a bear could be a good shout. Obviously, it's not going to have mass. You are sacrificing a bit of speed.
Yeah.
For the tankiness.
My personal experience caveat to the bears is about 4 months ago, I was in the US and I saw a bear which had been hit by a car and it was dead. So for a car race...
Yeah, but it didn't have the mushrooms to throw at the car at the time.
If only they'd been... It was just trying to get to some corn.
Yeah.
I
think like a grizzly bear...
They are fast, aren't they?
That's the thing. They're unexpectedly fast.
Yeah.
But... not as fast as obviously some other animals, but they're unexpectedly fast.
I don't think there are very fast things with hooves, but I think a hoof on Rainbow Road is just not the one.
I was thinking rhino.
Yeah.
Because they, once again, unexpectedly fast.
Tanky.
Could just smash everything else out of the way.
Yeah.
But.
Grippy.
Yeah.
Bad.
It's just got little pads on its feet. It's just going straight off the edge.
Because, look, I'm no physicist or engineer. I haven't a clue what Rainbow Road is made out of. Rainbows, I assume. But whatever it is, doesn't look traction full.
There's not much grip on there.
No. I'm torn between bear or giant spider.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think giant spider would also have an intimidation factor.
Yeah.
If I rocked up on a spider the size of a horse. I think a spider the size of a horse is scarier than a bear the size of a bear.
Yeah, okay. Fair, I'll give you that one.
I will die on that hill.
That's fair enough.
Are you going bear and I'm going spider?
Yes.
Right, I'll see you on the racetrack.
So as Roddy and I prepare for our Rainbow Road Rumble, all that's left for me to say is thank you very much for listening to this episode of How Many Geese? We have recently just hit over 100,000 downloads on the podcast, so thank you all for engaging with the show. Get your questions for the show into our Instagram account, @HowManyGeese, and any animals you want Roddy to fight over to my Instagram account, @JABadams. We will be back next week with some more mad goose shenanigans. We'll see you next Tuesday.